Yeah, Friday afternoon. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, will be along a little bit later in this half hour. One of the things we're going to talk about are the sort of tasks as a business owner when you're running a business that you should maybe farm out or maybe give up. Sometimes taking care of HR deals or things like that sort of take your eye off the ball when it comes to running your business. And when should you know, or when do you know it's time to contract that out? We'll talk to Tom about that a little bit later. Front Row Phyllis will be here to give us all the details on the different festivals going on around town. I think she's probably live at Lollapalooza. And we start, as we do most Fridays, Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation from the Chicago Tribune, in the studio. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Happy Friday. How are
Happy
you?
Happy Friday.
All right, let's just start with your other gig, right? Because you're the content editor of Red Eye.
Helper and friend, I call it,
and
of Red Eye.
It's all about Lollapalooza this weekend?
It's all about Lollapalooza. They're down there, and I'm a little worried about them because it's, you know, it's in the 60s, and I think everybody was planning for, you know, 90s sweating.
Yeah. Well, they were all down there in the 60s as well, and everyone survived.
They're probably going to see it all over the course of 4 days, right? Every Chicago season and climate will be packed in.
All right, kind of a newsy week when it comes to the tech world and innovation in Chicago. Start with Grubhub picking up a Grubhub rival, or what exactly happened here?
It was a quiet week, and then wound up with some big tech stories locally. Grubhub, which is based in Chicago, the food delivery service, actually announced two deals this week, one with Groupon, and then an even bigger one with Yelp.
So they were working on both of these deals simultaneously, but they didn't tell either of the parties.
Right.
Is that typical? Is that not atypical?
I would imagine. I mean, I don't know that you necessarily would announce something before it happens or before it's official, right? There's always, you know, especially with a public company, going to be...
Yeah, I guess it wasn't a merger. It's an acquisition.
You know,
it's
exactly.
None of their business. All right, tell me about this Eat24 and how that fits into Grubhub and how it really might be more about Yelp than Eat24.
Yeah, so to date, there was sort of a, you know, Grubhub has its competitors and Eat24 would have been one of them. And they have now said they're going to purchase them. So, you know, Yelp, as we all know, has the local kind of business review site, which it is saying it's now going to focus more on that, getting rid of this food delivery business, which more and more people are thinking, you know, as Amazon ramps up in that space, they're going to be a huge competitor. So everybody else is kind of consolidating and bulking up so that they can, you know, try to fend that off.
But Grubhub will advertise or make their ordering available through Yelp?
They will. So if you're going on there looking at a restaurant, you know, idea is you're reading the Yelp reviews, you can then order right out of there from Grubhub to have the food delivered to your house.
How does that work? Because I think a lot of restaurants aren't that keen on Yelp, right? Because they tend to get ripped.
I know. So, see, I love Yelp.
Yeah.
I get that maybe the restaurants don't like it. As a user, I like it. I always feel like I can suss out the good, you know, the quality reviews.
With just the whiners.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess that will ultimately, right, from a B2B perspective, will give the restaurants less choice if they're less, you know, ultimately fewer options for providing the delivery.
Another story this week that maybe wasn't a shocker, but was, can something not be a shock but still be a surprise?
All the time, right?
Howard Tolman's, yeah.
You kind of maybe expect it, but you don't expect it at the moment that it happens.
Well, I'll give
you
the grand jury story from yesterday with the Washington stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of inevitable, and yet when it came, it was kind of a surprise. Howard Tolman announced he's leaving 1871.
Uh-huh.
And, but it was still kind of expected, and yet still was kind of a surprise when it happened.
Yeah, so Howard Tolman has been at the helm of 1871 for almost 4 years, which is a long time. I think even at the beginning, there was a thought, you know, that it would be a couple years, 3 years maybe. It's been almost four. So I think in that context, it's not necessarily unheard of that he would be stepping down. But certainly the news dropped like a bomb this week. I mean, it was definitely, I think, shocking. I'm not sure they were ready for the news to be out. The Sun-Times, hat tip to them. They got the scoop on this one and got a hold of a memo that was like from within the board that was announcing that he would be departing at the end of the year. And then 1871, and Howard went on to confirm that and talk a little bit more about what's happening. But basically, they're going to be on the search for a new sort of CEO to run 1871.
Okay, so he's been there longish, 4 years, and he has become, he's a great cheerleader for it. He's, you know, boundless energy, which is all great. On the plus side, or maybe nearing a negative side, is then he sort of becomes synonymous with 1871, which wouldn't serve 1871 in the long term. I'm sure he recognizes that too.
Yeah, he's a force of nature. And of course, that leaves you with people saying good things about you and maybe people saying less good things about you as well. He was definitely a great ambassador all over the place. Certainly the profile of 1871 locally and nationally has only grown. The footprint has grown to the point where people start to wonder, should it be getting any bigger? And one of the things that he wanted to accomplish during his time was, you know, when they started, they were getting government grants, a lot of help like that. And they wanted to, you know, start making more money depending on their own services and partnerships and, you know, tenant rent and all the kind of ways that would make them a little more independent. So he says they've reached some of those goals.
All right. Tell me about, I'm tight on time. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So talk twice as fast. Give me half as many facts. Tell me about this Microsoft Office World Championship.
So we have to fit this in because it's too funny, even if we have to talk over each other. So yes, well, some kids are at summer camp. Others are participating in the Microsoft Office World Championship at Disneyland.
So kids are sitting at home working on their Excel skills?
They are, and they actually compete on things like Excel, on PowerPoint, and they like come out of it, I guess, making the best pivot tables and getting the best jobs.
Okay, really, do they get the best?
I mean, I know
that was the pitch, like it helps them get hired. I mean, if you're a world champion Microsoft Office worker,
it's got to burnish your resume a little bit, right?
Although they did say, because there were, 50 countries represented. And the article, you guys pointed out that if you were, like, in China, it does help you if you win something like this to get nicer housing and all of that.
Yep.
What's your strongest? Excel, Word?
I feel like I should know Excel better than I do.
Right.
I've always been a Mac user, so my skills on Microsoft products are not the greatest, I'm going to have to admit.
I'm working on mail merge. I'm hoping that I'm on a pace for, like, after 10 years, I should have the mail merge down.
There you go.
Andrea Haines. Read more at thechicagotribune.com, Blue Sky Innovation. Nice to see you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, TV too.
A Friday edition, and, coming into Friday, everyone is pretty much a little peppy, a little zippy.
Oh, okay.
They're ready for the big weekend coming ahead. Gimbal has got this vibrant jacket on.
I'm trying to make up for my lack of sleep, my sleep deprivation.
And
today,
he's just kind of moving around like a zombie. What's going on, brother?
I was in San Francisco last night. I don't know if I'm going to do it again. 11 hours in San Fran. I got there at 1 in the afternoon. And I took a red eye back at midnight last night.
Why would you do that?
I needed to be here with you.
That's a good answer.
I've got three meetings this afternoon that I had to be at.
Thanks, because I believed it for about 5 seconds.
I care.
And you took it away from me.
I care.
You got offices out there, right?
Yeah, we have an office out there. It's a good business.
That's a brutal trip.
It's a long trip. But you know what I figured in my mind? I said to myself, if I were going out to Schaumburg in February and there was a blizzard, it's about the same.
Right. I have a friend of mine who travels to Hong Kong for business. He's in the toy business.
Yep.
And, you know, so he's got a trip coming up, I think, in a couple of weeks again. And I'm just thinking, what a brutal trip. And he said, look, I've been doing it for 20 years. I know how to do it. It's just part of it.
You get into a routine, and it's when people say, oh, you get up early in the morning, or you work until 2 in the night, or in the morning, or the
right.
night shift. You roll with it, and you figure out how it works.
And then it just becomes part of what
it's part of what you do.
So day trips to San Francisco, no big deal.
It's, you know what, it was it's really not that bad. Nothing that I'll take a nap at about 4 o'clock.
I can't trump you, but I got a buddy who is a businessman, and he did a day trip to Iceland. Literally flew to Iceland to have a meeting at the airport
and
a conference room at the airport and then flew back.
I've done that domestically. I've gone out to California. I've done East Coast, which is easy. But, you start to realize is what would you do for a client? What would you do for revenue? What would you do for your career?
Right.
And it's like, if that's it, it's not that big of a deal.
I guess that's true. If you see if there's the carrot at the end of that stick, then it's okay to do.
And from a career standpoint, which is what we talk about here, right, I always look at it and say, what would my competitors not do? And if they wouldn't get on a plane for a day trip, and that's all I have to do, and the whole it's like I'm getting my skin ripped off and dipped in salt. I mean,
no. Although it could feel that way sometimes, some trips.
Depends what airline you're flying.
Well, so I guess we're talking about that a little bit today because the idea is you're the man, you're the CEO, you've got to do certain things, and then there are certain things that could eat up all of your time, and you're better served not doing them. And so the question is, when do you know when to? Well, let's talk about HR.
Yep.
When do you outsource or source that, or when do you try to keep it inside?
So what usually happens with CEOs is where they rise up through the ranks. If they come out of finance, they love finance. They want to be involved. If they come up through sales and marketing, they want to stay involved. You don't see as many CEOs that come up through the HR chain, and so they don't usually get involved.
Is that changing?
You're starting to see a little more of it. You're starting to see more marketing, more product people, because the combination, the intersection of technology and marketing is really becoming something new. I think HR, you're getting people that'll come out of other functions and do a rotation in HR at big companies,
okay,
and then go into the C-suite.
Because HR seems to be ballooning.
What it is it's the oil that makes the engine go. It's not the engine,
right?
But it's
right,
the oil. And if you don't have oil in your engine, it corrodes and it gets bad.
And I'll try to continue that analogy, but fail. But so the oil is a little, like you're saying, a little peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
But it's becoming more and more complicated, I think, to keep it all going.
There's so much stuff, and you look at a state like Illinois, where I was in California, that are such. I don't want to say they're not pro employer.
Right.
How about that for a statement? And so
does that make them pro-employee?
It makes them pro-litigation. And so you have a lot of employment laws. When you had the Affordable Care Act coming in, and if we ever have it going out, you're going to have stuff like that. You've got overtime exemption laws. There's so many things in the intricacies that to outsource at least part of your HR functions make a lot of sense.
But to do that, and if you're talking about a small business, then you're giving up something. Right, you're sort of ceding control.
You still need a champion internally. Where I see companies that fail is they just say, okay, you have it to what you're thinking.
Right.
And it's not somebody internally, and the people don't feel a connection, and they're getting reprimanded or taught by somebody who doesn't know the nuances of the organization. I don't like that model. But there are companies.
Right, so the idea is that I work here, but in a way I'm working for them
exactly.
too.
Exactly. And what it really should be is a hybrid model where a person comes on site, and maybe you work with firms where they have a dedicated person part-time at different organizations.
And so you can do it a couple ways, right? So a small business, the CEO, she might be just doing it on her own.
Yes.
Or she might hire someone in to do it, or she might contract out.
You know, there's somebody, I'll give a plug to somebody, right? You bring Adam Oxtein on from Stratix.
I was thinking of Adam when I saw this topic,
right?
Yeah.
And so Adam does a really good job. So he's a software as a service model. So they're a payroll company, but then they have HR consultants on staff, and you can outsource portions of it. And so even big companies, you have 1,000, 1,500 employees, can you do all of the nuances, right?
Right.
Listen, companies outsource legal, they outsource tax all the time. You're just outsourcing some advice and counsel on certain areas of people.
But this might be the one that has the most direct impact with your employees.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. What they should be doing, though, is coaching your managers on how to do performance reviews and how to do one-on-ones. You don't want to outsource everything. Even if it's internally, if your managers let all the hard conversations happen with HR, that's not good either.
All right, so what time is your last meeting today after your flight in this morning?
I've got a 3:30 today.
A 3:30 is the end, and then so you'll still have time to get over to Lollapalooza for a little bit?
Oh, you know me. That's where I'll be.
And then in bed, maybe
that was sarcasm there.
Bed 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. Tom Gimbel, thanks for coming by.
Always good to see you.
The CEO of the LaSalle Network. Check him out at TomGimbel.com and LaSalle Network.
At LaSalleNetwork.com, and follow us on Twitter at LaSalle Network.
And follow Tom on Twitter at LaSalle. There's no TomGimbel.com, is there?
No, let's just stay at LaSalle Network.
Oh, what's that site? It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Friday afternoon, we're in the Allstate Showcase studio. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hey, I hope you'll follow me on Twitter. You can find me at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook. I have a public page under the name Steve Bertrand on Facebook as well. In the studio now is Dr. Sean Palmer from the Hip and Knee Center, an orthopedic surgeon. And, I don't know. Doctor, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thank you very much for having me.
Let's talk about hip and knee replacement as an income earner, or increased income possibilities when it comes to patients, right? It used to be that you would come up sort of short when it was time to have a hip replacement, or I don't want to use the word lame, but you just couldn't get around as much, couldn't work as long. That is sort of changing in recent years.
That has certainly been the trend over the last 15 years or so, where even when I first started practice, patients would get admitted to a hospital the night before surgery, have a three-hour operation, stay 3 to 5 days in the hospital, and it was a three-month recovery that took you out of the workforce, took you out of your life, and it really encumbered not only the patient but also the patient's family.
It was an ordeal that would go on for a long, long time.
Correct.
What's changed? Why is that no longer the case?
There's actually been a very steady trend over the last 15 years towards hip and knee replacement is now should be considered an outpatient procedure with a much faster recovery, where the minority of patients are now being done on the hospital side, at least in my practice.
Is that because the procedure's changed, or the post sort of therapy has changed, or why is it you can do it more quickly now?
The actual implant design and technology is roughly about the same. Certainly materials are better, so implants are lasting longer. That brings in the younger patient as well. But in terms of outpatient care, it really has become more of a focus on patient needs and multimodal pain control, and preparing the patient more for the expected shorter stay.
Right. So, okay, you can laugh at him if you want, but I'm thinking of the maternity wards 40, 50 years ago, where women would go in the hospital and stay for a few days, and then they realized it probably didn't serve them all that well anyway to get them out into their life again, to get the babies home and all of that. Is that the same thing, where you have this procedure and then it's like, well, let's just get going?
That analogy is exactly correct, in that much of what we did for patients was really not necessary to benefit their outcome.
Right. And people, you said, are getting these procedures younger and younger. Is that because we are in worse and worse shape, or why is it that you're moving younger?
Well, you do have kind of the slow aging of the population, which brings in, you know, now a larger group of 40, 50, and 60-year-olds. And those patients are also working later into the years. And so rather than tolerate the disability of a hip or knee arthritic condition, which is correctable, they're choosing at a younger stage in life to have that fixed to get them back into the workforce.
So rather than I'm going to deal with this and maybe when I'm retired I'll take care of the long-term pain, they're thinking I'll do it now and then I can work longer.
Correct. And not just with work, but in terms of activities. You have patients in their 50s and 60s who still want to play senior league hockey, or they're very avid tennis players, and they're not willing to accept the decreased effect on their lifestyle.
Right. I have a buddy who's a fitness trainer who's actually getting a hip replaced. I think it's, I don't know if it's this week or next. And, well, so you think of a guy who's clearly fit. I'm not sure what, I don't want to talk about his case in particular, and I'm not sure what led to it, but what does sort of, if we're getting these younger and younger, we're having this hip pain and this knee pain, what is it that leads to it? What causes it?
Well, the first and foremost cause is the individual patient's genetics, and that gives them a predisposition to the joint wearing earlier. And then on top of that, it's what do we do to ourselves? And it's our activities, injuries.
So can being hyperactive actually lead to an earlier replacement?
It perhaps can, but it also depends on the level of everybody's ability to tolerate any particular disability.
So I'm thinking of young kids who are, and this might be a little far afield, but, you know, boys who play baseball or girls who are doing basketball and they're doing only that one sport and they're stretching their, whether it's a hip or knee or elbow or shoulder in one particular way from a very early age, day after day after day. Does that sort of lead to earlier sort of needs for this stuff?
Actually, I don't think there's anything that would indicate that, and I certainly wouldn't want to discourage anyone from pursuing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's good to know because as a, you know, my kids are college age now, but when they were younger, people always said that, you know, you don't want to do that because you're going to end up doing long-term damage to joints.
Well, I think the steady growth in hip and knee replacements, especially in younger patients, is not so much driven by higher demand lifestyles. It's driven by an increasing desire not to tolerate the effects.
Right. So if you are going. So what you seem to be saying is if you're going to have the pain, you're going to have the pain regardless of the way you live your life.
Correct.
And so you might as well get it fixed now rather than wait too long.
That certainly seems to be the trend.
What, at your practice, more knees, more hips? I'm thinking younger people get the knees, the older people get the hips.
There are generally more knee replacements done nationwide than there are hip replacements. In my particular practice, I'm about 80% hips.
Okay, why is that?
Because I tend to focus more on the outpatient procedure, and the hip replacement lends itself a little better to that.
And is what's the cost like? I mean, has this become more affordable? Is that why people are more doing it more often?
Costs are coming down dramatically for that service, especially when taken outside of the hospital setting. And joint replacement is being done more and more in the outpatient surgical center, and the cost savings are tremendous. And it also opens up the service to patients who otherwise wouldn't have the means to go to a hospital and pay those costs.
I would imagine an elective thing, but must be covered by insurance too.
Both of those statements are true.
Okay, right. All right. And so people can get more information from you. Where do they find the information?
www.thehipandkneecenter.com.
And why is it that, tell me about what you enjoy in this and what brings you to it. What's your favorite part of it?
Performing surgery is quite enjoyable as an activity itself, but the best part of it is I actually get to fix people and take care of their pain and their disability and return them to a very active lifestyle. And so the patient population tends to be healthy as well as very grateful, and they all seem to do very well.
Tell me about what it is that you find enjoyable about surgery, because I don't, you know, most people who are going to be surgeried don't consider it that enjoyable. Tell me what brings joy to the doctor who does it.
For myself personally, it's the knowing the satisfaction the patient is going to find on the other end of it, and can I do it for them more efficient, faster, with higher quality, and actually exceed their expectations.
So I think you said earlier that the procedure hasn't changed much over the years?
The technology of the implants have not changed much over the years. The materials have gotten better and the durabilities have gotten better, particularly with the hip replacement, however, the advent of the anterior approach hip, which is a different surgical approach of the exact same implants, provides a much faster recovery for
patients. How do you see it changing in the future?
I think you're going to see a better and better durability out of implants, allowing the procedure to be offered to younger and younger patients.
So do these replacement joints have a lifespan generally? I mean, you know, so if I get it at 55, could I plan on it again at 85, or is that what you're talking about, that 55 might last me the rest of my life?
We're typically seeing reliable durabilities of about 20 years. So you do have the expectation of a patient in their 50s with the average lifespan of a male in this country approaching 80. Mm-hmm. And for females well over 80, there is, of course, the possibility of the implant wearing and a second surgery being done.
Dr. Sean Palmer, the orthopedic surgeon at the Hip and Knee Center. It was great to talk to you. I guess I hope I see you one day. I'll probably have a hip or a knee. Why not? We'll run into it in the office. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, I don't know if a tractor pull is in your plans, in your future, but front row Phyllis is on the phone line to talk about some other things that might be going on. Phyllis, welcome back to the Business Lunch. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Do you have any tractor pull tickets available for us this weekend?
I know. I was listening to that. I'm like, I don't even think I've been on one. So I have to add that to my agenda.
You've never seen a tractor pull?
No. I think I have to do that.
You know what? We're having a little trouble with your phone line. Let's cut you loose here real quick, and we'll try to reconnect. I'm not sure what's going on there. Front row, Phyllis talking about what's going on this weekend. And since we have a minute, we're going to recall Phyllis, I think. I want to let people know, you know, we're working on our WGN trips for next year. And a lot of people have been sending me emails, a few phone calls about where we're planning to go. I hope to have, well, I know we're going to lead a group to Norway. Should have told this to O. We're going to lead a group to Denmark and Norway beginning next June. And I really thought that I would have the information on the trip by now. I expect to have it within a day or two. So if you're interested in going to Norway, it's going to be next June. Shoot me an email at steve@stevebertrandtravel.com or drop me a message on Facebook or whatever, and I'll get you on the email list, because we should have the details on that coming up in I hope by the beginning of next week, and those usually fill up pretty fast. So that's coming up. Right now, though, Phyllis, front row Phyllis is on the phone line. All right, how do you sound better now, Phyllis?
I think so.
I don't go to Lollapalooza before it starts. I mean, the cell service is terrible there. I told you that.
Right. Exactly. I'm trying to hide out in some corner amongst my, you know, close friends of, a million plus.
Yeah. I don't know. How's it going? So they had to cut they seem to be like they are almost like the Farmer's Almanac. You can predict bad weather by when Lollapalooza is going to be in Chicago.
I know, but tomorrow's going to be beautiful. Today's actually not so bad because, remember, when you have over a million people and it's hot, it's not that much fun. But I got to tell you, the acts are huge. You know, the lineup just gets bigger and bigger every year, from Chance the Rapper to Vance Joy, Big Sean, to plenty more. And you know what's great is they have stuff for the kids. They have that Kids-a-Palooza also. So kids under 10 years old actually are allowed in free. So that's pretty cool.
Wait, so their parents bringing their kids in under 10 to Lollapalooza?
Yeah, but the parents stay with the kids.
Okay. I could see an infant or toddler, but I don't know about a 9 or 10-year-old running around Lollapalooza. I'm not sure about that.
No, I think they stay in the kids' area.
One of the big hits at Ravinia every summer is Darius Rucker, and I see he's back this weekend.
He is back this weekend. He's going to be over there tomorrow. The billion seats are available. Lawn is sold out. And, of course, you know, I love Darius Rucker. I love what he's done. You know, he started his claim to fame in the early 80s with Hootie and the Blowfish.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And remember, and then he changed gears and about 15 years later created himself as one of the number one country artists. And he actually just, he has a new album coming out, which is his fifth album. That's going to be coming out in October. He's released two singles off of it, and, of course, they've hit number one since then. So it's going to be a great show, and that's tomorrow at Ravinia.
I'm always a sucker. Well, that's not really true. I was going to say I'm always a sucker for the art festivals in the neighborhoods, and I see there's an Edgewater Festival. There's also one, the Glenview Art Festival, this weekend. I like to go, but I always lose my wife and daughter to the jewelry tents. I just don't want to sit outside a jewelry tent at a festival.
Well, you know what? The good news is there's about 185 other artists that are going to be showcasing there. And so I think you're going to be okay. It's located, of course, at the Glentown Center in Glenview. It's free admission, but it does cost you once your wife and kids end up purchasing some of the items, right?
If they were to buy it quickly and go away, that would be fine. It's the lingering that kills me. All right, where do people find more information, Phyllis?
Just go to frontrowphyllis.com.
Nice to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.